When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Skims or Allbirds, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and great marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. It's home of Shop Pay, the number one checkout in the world. You can use it to boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through to checkout. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Allbirds uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/income.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today, I will analyze the case of Terry King. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Terry Wee King was born on April 17, 1961, in Andrews, Texas. He never graduated from high school. At some point, Terry moved to Cantonment, Florida. This is 19 miles north of Pensacola. There, he had difficulty maintaining steady work. In his diary, he wrote that he had little or no food and no money. It's not really clear why Terry struggled financially. Whatever the reason, this was a theme in his life. He never seemed to have enough money. Terry became heavily dependent on friends and acquaintances, including a neighbor he met while living in a trailer park named Ricky Marvin Chavez. Ricky was a local handyman who had been convicted in 1984 of committing terrible offenses against two teenage boys. In 1985, Terry King became romantically involved with a clothing challenge dancer named Janet French. On May 4, 1988, they had a son named Derek Allen King. On July 12, 1989, they had another son. His name was Alex David King. Janet had two children from another relationship as well. The family of six lived together and struggled financially. Terry and Janet ended their romantic relationship in 1992, but lived together for the next 2 years. In 1994, Janet left the family, including her two children from the other relationship. She changed her name, moved to Kentucky, and remarried. This same year, Terry found work as a press operator at a company called Pace Printing. His shift was from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m., and he made $7 an hour. Despite having steady work, Terry still had difficulties providing for his two sons. He sent them to a crisis home. At this time, Derek was six and Alex was five. During the next year, 1995, the boys went into foster care. Alex moved back in with Terry within a month, but Derek continued living with foster parents. In 2000, Terry moved into a house on Muskogee Road under a lease-to-own arrangement. This was a milestone in his mission to provide a stable environment for Alex. In early October 2001, Terry ended up getting Derek back. This is because Derek had ADHD and his foster parents struggled to control him. They just couldn't handle his disruptive and rebellious behavior anymore. After making the move, Derek experienced a culture shock living with Terry. For instance, he was surprised that Terry did not have a working television set. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On November 16, 2001, Terry King reported his sons Derek and Alex missing. He did not know it at the time, but they were in the trailer of his friend, Ricky Chavez. Allegedly, Ricky gave them marijuana and let them play video games. Later, he would also be accused of committing terrible offenses against Alex. On November 17, one of Terry's sons called him and said they had no plans of returning to live with him. The police found Derek on Saturday, November 24, and returned him to Terry. On Sunday, November 25, 2001, Alex called someone to pick him up and was transported home. Terry had his two sons back, but this was not a happy reunion. He was deeply concerned about their behavior and thought they might be dangerous. On the same day, Sunday, Terry told a friend of his that it looked like his boys were plotting something. He planned on putting them in separate bedrooms because he did not trust them. Terry was going to lock the bedroom doors from the outside with deadbolts and sleep in the living room. That night, Terry went to sleep in his living room recliner. It does not appear as though he followed through with this plan to lock his son's bedroom doors. At 1:39 a.m., now on Monday, November 26, 2001, firefighters responded to a report that Terry's house was on fire. When they entered his house, they found 40-year-old Terry King dead in his recliner. His feet were up on the arm of a couch, and his hands were folded as if he had been sleeping. Terry's head had been bashed in by an aluminum baseball bat. The flames never reached the living room. He was dead before the fire started. Terry's 13-year-old son, Derek, and his 12-year-old son, Alex, were not in the house. Nobody knew where they were. On the next day, Tuesday, November 27, Ricky Chavez brought Derek and Alex to a police station where the boys confessed to killing their father, Terry. Derek said that he and his brother, Alex, were afraid that Terry was going to punish them for running away to Ricky's trailer. Derek struck his father multiple times in the head with an aluminum baseball bat. He placed the baseball bat on a bed and set that bed on fire. Alex essentially offered the same story and added that he could see his father's brains after Derek struck him. As far as his role in the murder, Alex said that he gave Derek the idea to kill Terry. To explain how they ended up with Ricky, the boys claimed that they ran into him at a convenience store after the murder. Derek and Alex were charged with first-degree murder and arson. The police turned their attention to Ricky's possible involvement in Terry's murder. They learned that a payphone was used at a convenience store near Terry's house to place a collect call to Ricky's trailer at 1:39 a.m. on November 26, the same time that the fire was reported. The police questioned Ricky about this. He admitted the boys called him. He said that Alex was distressed. Ricky picked them up, took them to his trailer, and washed their clothing. The boys confessed to him that they murdered their father, Terry. The police went to search Ricky's trailer. His property had security cameras and electrified wires above a large fence. Inside his trailer, there was a trap door in the floor leading underneath. The police believe that Terry hid the boys there when they ran away prior to the murder. Investigators also found love letters from Alex to Ricky. In one, Alex wrote, quote, "Before I met Rick, I was straight, but now I am gay," unquote. On December 11, 2001, Ricky was arrested and charged with accessory after the fact and tampering with evidence. Later, Derek and Alex changed their story and claimed that Ricky murdered Terry and convinced them to take the fall. Their confession to the police was rehearsed. None of it was true. In addition, Alex accused Ricky of committing terrible offenses against him related to sex. Ricky was indicted on charges of first-degree murder and arson. In an extremely unusual and unwise move, the prosecutor decided to hold two separate trials. Ricky would be tried for Terry's murder, then Derek and Alex would be tried for the same murder. At each trial, the state would use the same evidence, but offer different interpretations. In August 2002, Ricky went on trial. Derek and Alex testified that he killed Terry. On August 30 of that year, a verdict was reached, but it was sealed until the other trial concluded. In September 2002, Derek and Alex went on trial. Derek did not testify because he was considered too erratic, but Alex did. He once again pointed the finger at Ricky. On December 6, Derek and Alex were convicted of second-degree murder and arson. Members of the jury believed that Ricky was the one who physically killed Terry with the aluminum baseball bat. They returned a guilty verdict for Derek and Alex because they believed the boys let Ricky into the house. It's worth noting that neither the state nor the defense had promoted that scenario. The jury generated that idea on their own. Now that the verdict had been reached, the verdict for Ricky's trial was made public. Ricky was acquitted for murder and arson. The confusing two-trial scenario was not pleasing to the judge. On October 17, 2002, the guilty verdict for Derek and Alex was set aside. The judge said the unusual and bizarre decision to try another man for the killing before the boys' trial violated the boys' rights to due process. On November 14, 2002, Derek and Alex pleaded guilty to third-degree murder. Derek received 8 years in prison, while Alex received 7. As I mentioned, Ricky was acquitted for murder and arson. This was good news for him, mostly because of the no murder part, but he was not out of the woods yet. The state charged Ricky for kidnapping and committing offenses of a sexual nature against Alex. The result of the second trial was a not guilty verdict, but the jury did convict Ricky of the lesser charge of false imprisonment. Ricky was sentenced to 5 years in prison. One might think that Ricky could now breathe a sigh of relief, but the state was not done with him yet. Ricky was charged with accessory to murder and tampering with evidence. On March 5, 2003, after his third trial, he was found guilty of both charges. Ricky Chavez was sentenced to 30 years in prison. He is scheduled to be released on November 16, 2031, when he will be 70 years old. Alex King was released from prison in 2008, even though he was charged with attempting to escape in 2005. Derek King was released in 2009. In 2011, Alex was arrested for violating the terms of his parole and for leaving the scene of an accident. On April 23, 2024, while Alex was in Montana, he died from a drug overdose. On June 1, 2025, Derek was arrested in Milton, Florida, and charged with felony sexual assault. Now moving to my analysis. Many people believe that Derek and Alex King are not guilty of murder. They accuse Ricky of being responsible. In their opinion, if he did not physically carry out the murder, he manipulated the boys into killing Terry. Even the jury that convicted Derek and Alex believed that Ricky is the one who actually used the baseball bat. They were shocked when he was acquitted of murder. It went against their theory of the crime. The state of Florida had no idea what happened, which is why they ended up in that bizarre two-trial situation. They promoted two incompatible theories of the crime, creating a legal nightmare. This brings me to the question, are Derek and Alex guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea they are guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Terry King was beaten to death with an aluminum baseball bat as he slept in a recliner in his house. There is no question that Derek is the person who physically struck him with the bat. He confessed to being the perpetrator right after the killing and 24 years later during an interview with the media. He stood at Terry's grave and said, "Please forgive me." Derek claimed that Terry was threatening violence right before the killing, therefore he did what he had to do. Considering how Terry was asleep, how could he have been threatening violence? Clearly, there was no imminent danger, even if Terry was not a candidate for the Father of the Year award. Alex confessed that he gave Derek the idea to murder Terry. He claimed that Terry would stare at him and his brother for hours as punishment for various offenses. Moving to the exculpatory factors, the behavior of Ricky Chavez was extremely suspicious around the time of the killing. The boys stayed in his trailer both before and after Terry was killed, and Ricky allegedly committed offenses against Alex. The police recovered a note written by Alex professing his love for Ricky. It appears as though Ricky had a motive to eliminate Terry, namely, he wanted the boys to live in his trailer. Terry was the only obstacle to Ricky achieving this goal. Derek and Alex were impressionable. Ricky could have easily manipulated them. He could have still been responsible for the murder without being the one who physically attacked Terry. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I believe that Derek and Alex are guilty of murder? In my opinion, I believe that Derek is guilty of murder, but I am not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that Alex is. Usually, when two people work together to carry out a murder, they are equally guilty. However, this case has some unusual circumstances. Alex was confused due to the alleged inappropriate relationship with Ricky. I believe that Ricky manipulated Alex into convincing Derek to carry out the murder of Terry. Derek had severe behavioral problems and was upset with his father. Therefore, he was fine with the idea of killing him. This brings me to the next question. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Terry King was a man who just could not seem to get his life on track. He had chronic financial problems and ended up romantically involved with a clothing challenge dancer. After his girlfriend left, Terry could not handle his sons, so he sent them away. Alex came back to Terry not long after this. The father and son appeared to get along well for a while. However, Ricky was involved in their lives and may have developed an inappropriate interest in Alex. When Derek moved back in with Terry years later, he was unhappy. He wanted a television set and more access to video games. The unhappiness Derek was experiencing gave Ricky the opportunity to eliminate Terry. Ricky manipulated Alex, who in turn asked Derek to carry out the murder. Now moving to my final thoughts. This case was so unusual that no one knew what to make of it, including the state of Florida. The motives of the three offenders were complex and interacted with each other, making the assignment of blame difficult. From the victim's perspective, however, I think it really comes down to one grim reality. For one reason or another, each of the three offenders in this case wanted Terry dead. Somehow, he became the focal point of their frustrations and schemes. Being at the center of that storm proved to be a dangerous place. Those are my thoughts in the case of Terry King. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon. This case involved a legal situation that should never have happened. The idea of trying two different parties with two theories of the crime is utterly ludicrous. If this concept was expanded outward to an even more egregious level, we could see a situation where everybody, even tangentially connected to a murder, is charged. The prosecutor could say, let's let the jury figure it out. Let's just put everybody in front of a jury and see what happens. Maybe one of them will be found guilty. I think what motivated this bad decision was simply the strange situation of this case. We see that Ricky could be involved in some weird way, but then Derek and Alex confessed to the murder. Derek was the one who actually used the baseball bat. So I think the prosecutor just didn't know what to do. He had no idea how to handle this. He had indictments for murder against everybody, for first-degree murder, and thought, okay, let's let the juries figure it out. The problem is, when a prosecutor brings a case forward, they need to have a reasonable likelihood of getting a conviction. How could the prosecutor believe that he could get a conviction against both parties, against Ricky and against Derek and Alex? If all the parties had been found guilty, what would have happened? How would that have worked? It would have created reasonable doubt for everybody. How can a person be guilty of a murder when someone else is also guilty of that same murder? So this is one of those situations where the prosecutor really didn't think things through. Or if he did, he came up with the incorrect conclusion.